I don't believe we are right at this moment. Let me check with John.
Okay. I think we have two technical surprises for folks this evening. That'll be nice additions to the meeting when we get there.
Good evening, Karen.
Hello, Robert. How are you?
How you doing?
Okay, thank you.
I think we're waiting for channel 20.
Well, I'm looking at it and it's up.
Is it?
I'll just check with Wendy as she comes back. She was going to check with IT John, make sure that we're okay. We'll see if Wendy is ready to come back on.
I don't believe channel 20 is up. We had to reboot it, and I think it's taking a moment.
Okay, then let's. Why don't we go ahead and we'll call to order the City Council meeting of Monday, February 20th, 2021. It is 6:02. And we're going to go into a technical hold for approximately 5 minutes or until Wendy comes back and says we are ready. Very good. Then I will recall this meeting to order. It is our Monday, February 22nd, 6 p.m. City Council meeting of the City of Grover Beach. And in compliance with the state and county shelter at home orders, meetings are being held by teleconference until further notice. This meeting can be viewed on Channel 20 and is available via live streaming on the city's website and on www.slow-span.org. And members of the public may provide public comment during the course of the meeting by calling area code 805-321-6639. And that phone line is open currently. So if you would all join me in a moment of silence for the for those who have been hurt or have lost their lives in the recent storms. Very good. Thank you for joining me in that moment of silence. And one of the things that was always so enjoyable When we had in-person city council meetings, was that we had a member of the school community who would do the flag salute for us. And so this evening, I'm excited to introduce Zoe Rushing, who is 10 years old, and she's a fourth grader at Grover Heights Elementary School. So Zoe's favorite subject is in school is math, and her favorite activities outside of school, of course, are roller derby and skiing. What she likes most about living in Grover Beach is that it's a small town filled with people that care for each other and are good neighbors. So when Zoe grows up, she would like to be an astronaut or an astrophysicist. So it's my pleasure this evening to bring in Zoe Rushing to do the flag salute. And if those on the call would mute themselves so that we can have Zoe do the flag salute. And thank you, Wendy, for having a flag available for us. Zoe, the floor is yours.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Very nicely done. Thank you very much. So we definitely appreciate that. And thank you to your parents for giving me some information on which to share with you this evening. And hopefully, when we come back in person, we will be able to have you lead us in a flag salute again. So thank you, Zoe, for joining us. And you're always welcome to stick around and watch the rest of the meeting, but you might have something else you might want to do. So, but with that, I will turn to our city clerk for a roll call, please.
Councilmember Bright.
Here.
Councilmember Miller.
Here.
Councilmember Robert.
Here.
Mayor Pro Tem Shaw is absent. Mayor Lee.
Here. And so we do have a quorum this evening. So yeah, Mayor Pro Tem Shaw is otherwise committed to a meeting this evening and so won't be able to join us. We will look forward to having her back with us at our next meeting. So with that, I'll turn to our city attorney and see if there's any closed sessions announcements or updates that he needs to provide us at this time.
Thank you, Mayor. No, we do not have any this evening.
Very good. Then I will bring it back to agenda review. I do just want to remind folks that if you do have any public comments this evening, please call in at 805-321-6639, and proverbial operators are standing by. So at this time, the council will take a look at the agenda and see if we need to make any changes to the order of the business to be conducted or receive requests from staff regarding announcements or any changes in the order of the day. So in having spoken with the city manager, he doesn't have any changes to the order of the day, but I'll check for the city council members, see if there's any changes that they want to make.
I'll make a motion that we accept the agenda as presented.
I'll second it.
We have a motion and a second. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Very good. We will go ahead and proceed with the agenda as published. And so this evening, we have no ceremonial calendar and no presentations currently. So we do have next on the agenda is public communications, where during this time, the council will allow public communication with additional comments, if necessary, allowed after the regular business items. Any member of the public may address the council for a period not to exceed 3 minutes total on any item of interest within the jurisdiction of this council. The council will listen to all communications. However, in compliance with the Brown Act, the council cannot act on items that are not on tonight's agenda. And if you would like to call in for public comment, please call in at 805-321-6639. And I'll turn it over to our city clerk to see if we have any public comments tonight.
I have not received any public comments, nor is there anyone on the line.
Very good. Then I will go ahead and close public comment and bring it back to the council for the consent agenda, where we do have several routine items that are scheduled for consideration as a group, and the recommendations are on the agenda. Let's see if there's any questions from staff on any items on the consent agenda. We'll start with Councilmember Miller.
None for me. Thank you.
Very good. Councilmember Robert.
No, sir.
Very good. Councilmember Bright. Very good. Then no. I will. Thank you. And I didn't have any questions either that weren't already answered by the city manager earlier, with no substantive changes to any of the responses. So I'll turn it to our city clerk and see if there's any members of the public that want to speak under public communications on the consent agenda.
No, I have no one on the line.
Very good. Then we'll go ahead and close public communications on the consent agenda and bring it back to the council for consideration.
Well, then I'll make a motion that we accept the items on the consent agenda as proposed.
I'll second the motion.
We have a motion and a second. It looks like we do have a roll call requirement. So, Madam City Clerk, please.
Councilmember Bright.
Yes.
Councilmember Miller.
Yes.
Councilmember Robert.
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Shaw is absent. Mayor Lee.
Yes. Very good. So we do have an approved consent agenda, and I do want to say thank you to staff for all of the hard work in putting that together. There is obviously the consent agenda is a series of routine items, but they are very important items moving forward with the city, and so it's a good opportunity in there for those who have an opportunity to want to read and get updated on a lot of city activities. There's a COVID-19 update. Working with through some community development block grant information, as well as a cooperative agreement with SLOCOG, and then also a follow up on the mid-year budget requests that we provided direction to staff on last time. So always very good to see the work that's done under the consent agenda. So that will take us to our public hearings tonight, of which we do have none. That'll take us to our regular business items, and I will remind folks that if anyone does want to make a comment on any of our regular business items, you can call in at 805-321-6639. And item number 8 on our agenda this evening is a utility rate study findings and recommendations, and I'll turn it over to our administrative services director Deanne Purcell for the presentation.
Thank you, and good evening, Mayor and Council. I would like to introduce Kevin Burnett with Wilden Financial Services. He has assisted us with our most current 5-year utility rate study findings. Our last rate study was conducted in 2016. So I will turn it over to Kevin.
Very good. Thank you for joining us, Mr. Burnett. And I'll give you a moment to put your water down. And
thank you. All right. So as Deanne said, I'm Kevin Burnett. I'm not Chris Fisher. He was unfortunately tied up. His flight was delayed. So I'm stepping in to be Chris Fisher tonight. But we both worked on the study. So we're both intimately familiar with the work that was done. So I'll try not to take up too much of your time tonight. So next slide, please. All right. So what we had on our agenda to walk through with you tonight was to review the purpose of the study that we conducted, give you a brief overview of the utility rate setting process, where we are at in the current study process, the summary of the proposed revenue increases. I'll spend a little bit of time with that, go over the financial plan summary, the proposed rates, and then what the next steps would be. Next slide, please. There we go. So the purpose of the rate study, and this is typical for any rate study, it's not specific to the rate study that was done for Grover Beach, although all the data and the financial plans and whatnot that were developed were specific to Grover Beach. So in general terms, what we try to do is break things down into two steps. The first step is to take a look at your existing water and sewer revenues and do an evaluation of whether or not the revenues that you have today are going to be sufficient over the next 10-year period to cover your operations and maintenance expenses, your salaries, chemicals, any of those kinds of expenses, as well as capital expenses. So repairing and maintaining the systems, meeting minimum level reserve requirements, which we'll talk about in a little bit, meet any legal obligations associated with your outstanding debt. That's something that we'll touch on in a minute too. So those first pieces constitute the financial plan. That tells us how much revenue we need in order to operate the water and sewer systems efficiently. The second piece of the rate study is the second bullet there, the developed rates, which will generate sufficient revenue to meet the costs of providing services. So while the first part tells us how much revenue we need, the second piece is to tell us how we're going to get that revenue. So once we've developed the revenue needs, then we need to figure out the rates that are going to generate that revenue while maintaining compliance with Proposition 218, so that we're assessing rates to our customers that are equivalent to the cost that they place on the system. And we don't have any cross-subsidization. We're making sure that everybody's paying their proportionate and fair and equitable share. And then the third piece that we looked at here was in working with city staff throughout this process, it was determined that we wanted to look at tiered residential water rates to encourage conservation. So those were the main steps that we went through in this study. This is a more general approach to the overall approach to a utility rate study. So starting with the boxes on the left, that's the planning. So that's where we had our initial kickoffs with the city staff. We wanted to make sure that we understood what the goals and objectives of the city was. We did all our data collection. We asked a lot of questions. Staff had a lot of questions of us. It was a very iterative process to go through and make sure everybody was on the same page at all the times, so that we were moving forward in conjunction with each other. The second set of boxes there is the analysis. So this is where we were taking your customer statistics, your billing data, your water use, your sewer customer data, looking at all of that, analyzing that data, looking at your system revenue requirements. Again, how much revenue do we need? Talking with Greg about the capital improvement plan, what did he identify as the needs to maintain the system? And then we developed 10-year financial plans for both water and sewer, and looked at some different rate options. And we did our initial assessment, had some meetings with staff, made some refinements based on their thoughts, their recommendations. Again, a very iterative process where we were working in cooperation with city staff very closely. And then that got us to the communication side, where we had the summary report, which was written, a public presentation where we're at today. And then hopefully with council's approval, we'll get an adopted rate and financial plan carried forward. So next slide, please. So where we're at in the current rate study process. So as I've been mentioning, we've been working very closely with staff throughout this process to make sure that we had a good understanding what all the staff's data was, what the city's data was, what the capital needs were. So we're in that blue section towards the middle of the slide there, the adopt report. And based on council direction, if you approve, we would set a date for a public hearing and adopt rates with the goal of having new rates effective July 1, 2021. So in between now and July 1, 2021, we would need to mail the Prop 218 notices and conduct a public hearing on the rates themselves. So next slide, please. So we're going to move into the financial plans now. So we'll look at water first. So we are proposing revenue increases on water. Just like household utilities have seen costs go up over the last several years, the operating cost for the water utility has seen its costs increase over the last several years. Some specific costs that we have going forward are costs related to the Central Coast Blue Project, some water main replacements, reservoir maintenance. And then you'll see at the bottom the meet targeted reserves, which I touched on briefly a little bit earlier. So what the meet targeted reserve levels is referring to is we've adopted a financial plan that assumes 180 days of O&M expense is held in reserves. So what that means is if we had a perfect world, if we lived in a perfect world, we would send bills out to our customers. The customers' bills would get paid. The city would have that revenue, and then the city would receive their bills, their expenses, and they would be able to pay those bills after our customers have paid us. Unfortunately, that's not the world that we live in, and there's always going to be a mismatch between when we send out bills, when we achieve our revenues, get paid for our bills coming in, and when we have to pay our bills. So that 180 days cash reserve is walking around money, if you will, and it allows us to be sure that we can cover our expenses while we're waiting for our bills to get paid. And at the same time, it also provides a little bit of cushion in case there is an unexpected expense that comes up that we weren't aware of. There's a water main break or vehicle repairs or something along those lines, making sure that we have money available to cover those costs. The last line item is the meet debt service coverage requirements. So the water utility does have some debt outstanding. When the city issued that debt, part of the bond covenants from issuing the debt stated that you would meet a debt service coverage ratio of 1.20 times. So what that means is that for every dollar of debt service that's outstanding in a given year, the city needs to make sure that it has $1.20 available to pay that debt service. It doesn't mean that the city's going to pay $1.20 for every dollar of outstanding every year. They just pay that $1 of debt outstanding, but they need to make sure that they have $1.20 in revenues available. And it provides comfort for the bondholders that the city is maintaining the system and generating the revenues it needs to cover its costs. So while I mentioned that the 1.2 times is what the legal coverage is, the city has chosen to target a 1.50, so $1.50 for every dollar outstanding. That's best financial practices. It provides a little bit more comfort to the bondholders. And should the city want to go out and issue additional debt in the future, it would probably result in a higher rating from the bond agencies, which would mean a lower interest rate, which would save your customers money over time through lower interest rates by targeting that higher reserve level. Next slide, please. We got a bit of a delay here, or is it my screen frozen? There we go. Oh.
Yeah, I think it might be your screen has frozen, Kevin. The post-water financial plan.
Okay. It should be on revenue recommendations water. Is that what everybody's seeing? Okay, yes, perfect. Sir. Great. So as I mentioned, we did have some revenue increases proposed. So we made a distinction here. We said water rate revenue increases. And we chose that as a specific term. So what this is telling us is that we need 2% more revenue to operate the water utility in each year, 21, 22 through 25, 26. Now, a 2% rate revenue increase does not necessarily equate to a rate increase. So in the first year there, 21-22, we are proposing some changes to the rate structure itself. So while we will be generating 2% more revenue, not all customers are necessarily going to see a 2% increase, depending upon how they use water, what size of meter they have, what customer class they are. They may see a different revenue increase than a 2%. In the subsequent years, 22-23 through 25-26, we're proposing an across-the-board increase to the water rates that are developed in that first year. So from 23 on, a rate increase will be the same as a revenue increase. Next slide, please. So the next slide here, so we've got, so this is the water cash flow projections under the status quo. So status quo meaning if we weren't to do any revenue increases, if we just operated the system as we have been today, this is what it would look like. So you can see when we get about 3/4 of the way down the page, the net cash flow, it's a negative number every year, meaning that we're spending more money than we're taking in. The line below that, the end of year cash reserves, you can see by the time we get to 25-26, we have end of year cash reserves of 943, and our target reserve just below that is 1,463. So if we don't raise any additional revenue going forward, we're not going to be able to meet our target cash reserve, our walking around money that I talked about. The bottom line there is the debt service coverage. So if you remember, the legal coverage is 1.20 times. So we are above the legal requirement that we have to meet. However, we're not meeting that best financial practices of 1.5 that the city has targeted. So next slide, please. So on the next slide, so this is with our rate revenue increases. So in this case, you can see we still have a negative cash flow for all of the years except for 22, 23. They're not as significant as they were in the previous slide. So that's an improvement under this plan. You can see the end of year cash reserves. By the time we get out to 25, 26, we're at 2182 versus the target reserves of 1463. And our debt service coverage is at 1.74, which is above the 1.5 target that we talked about. So by the time we get out to the end of the 5 years, the 25-26 period, you can see our reserves are higher than what they need to be, and our debt service coverage is higher than it needs to be at the 1.5. But at the same time, we looked at a 10-year horizon for you. Prop 218 only allows us to adopt 5 years worth of rates, but we wanted to develop a 10-year financial plan so that we didn't just stop at year five and then 6, 7, and 8, there was something else going on out there that we weren't aware of that would leave the city in a bad position going forward. So we tried to achieve those targets overall for a 10-year period, which is why we're looking a little bit better in year five. The net cash flow still remains negative for a couple more years, so we're drawing down on those end-of-year cash reserves going forward. So that's why we're a little bit higher in the five-year period than we would be if you were looking at the full 10-year perspective here. Next slide, please. So now we're moving into sewer rates. So it's a similar type story that we had on sewer side as we did on the water side. O&M costs have been increasing since we last undertook a study. In this case, it's the treatment costs through the sanitation district. We need to increase revenue in order to meet those costs. There's some capital needs that we need to meet that need to be maintained, the sewer main and system upgrades. And then we've got those targeted reserve levels, just like on the water side. Again, the 180 days cash reserve, walking around money. Next slide, please. So here are revenue recommendations for sewer. So again, we've got the 2% revenue increase each year. This wasn't something that we had planned. It wasn't something where we decided that we needed to have the same on water as we did sewer. It just happened to work out that way. So we're proposing 2% increases every year for sewer as well as for water. Next slide, please. All right, so again, we've got the status quo on the sewer side. So this was if we maintained rates as they are today, what would our financial plan look like? You can see the net cash flow, again, the red negatives through 24, 25. It does turn positive in 25, 26. But if you look at the row below that, the end of year cash reserves by 25, 26, we're at 153. And our target is 611. So we're well below what our target cash reserves is. It doesn't give us very much cushion at that point in time if we do have any unexpected expenses come up. Next slide, please. So then the next one we're moving into with our 2% increases every year. So again, we have some negative cash flows in the early years. We do improve in the later years. We're up to 182 as our end of year, our net cash flow, our end of year cash reserves are 546 versus the 611. So again, we're not quite at that target reserve level, but we are approaching it and we're building up over time to get to where we need to be. Next slide, please. All right, moving into proposed rates. So we'll start with water rates first. So you can see the second column from the left is your existing monthly bi-monthly base charge. So you've got the same charge assessed for a 5/8, 3/4 inch meter all the way up to a 1.5 inch meter. And then the 2, the 3, and the 4 inch meter are higher at that point in time. So we're maintaining that same philosophy going forward. We are proposing increases to the bi-monthly base charge. But the 5/8 inch through 1.5 inch is going to be the same for residential customers. And then the 2, the 3, and the 4 inch will go up. On the bottom, we've got our volume rates per 100 cubic feet. So you can see in the existing column there, even though we've got three tiers identified, it's 595 for all tiers. So right now you have a uniform rate structure where you don't have tiers, so it's just $5.95 per 100 cubic feet, no matter how much water is consumed. As I discussed earlier, one of the items that we discussed with staff early on in the project was wanting to get to a three-tiered rate structure to help encourage conservation going forward. So that's what we've done for the recommendation going forward. So you can see the 0 to 1,000 cubic feet a month at $2.84. Between 1,000 and 2,200 cubic feet a month would be at $5.87. So any customer using water within those first two tiers would see a decrease from where you're at today. But then any customer using more than 2,200 cubic feet in a month will be paying $8.47 per 100 cubic feet as opposed to the $5.95 today. And then those rates are proposed to increase as we move forward into 24-25. Next slide, please. So now we've got to the non-residential side. So again, you've got the existing bi-monthly base charge, where the higher the meter size, the larger the meter, the greater the base charge. We're proposed to do the same thing going forward. We've adjusted those rates a little bit. And then looking at the volume rate, both landscape and all our other are currently a uniform rate. We're proposing to keep that uniform rate. You can see landscape is proposed to go down from the 743 today to 640. And then the all other is proposed to go up from the $4.63 to $6.16 per 100 cubic feet. Next slide, please. So moving into the proposed sewer rates. So on the water side, we did propose some changes to the rate structure itself. On the sewer side, we are not proposing any changes. We're recommending that the rate structure stay the same. We're just proposed to increase that existing rate by 2% every year. So the existing column there is where your rates are today. And then fiscal year 21-22 through 24-25 has that annual 2% revenue increase applied to the rates themselves. So next slide, please. So then we've got some more rates here. You've got many more sewer classifications than you do water. So next slide, please. And I believe there's one more sewer. Yeah, so that's the last one on sewer. So again, all these rates are just proposed to increase by that 2% per year. Next slide, please. So one of the things that we wanted to do and that we were asked to do was to take a look at how Grover Beach would compare to your neighbors, both under the current rate structure and the proposed rate structure going forward. I will caveat this that it's often very difficult to get an exact apples-to-apples comparison between you and your neighbors. You have different treatment standards, you have different age of system, different size of system, different customer base. But at the same time, it's good to get an idea of where you stand compared to your neighbors. So we have Grover Beach current is about in the middle of that graph there with the darker blue bar and the lighter green bar. The darker blue representing water and the lighter green representing sewer. So the current bi-monthly bill at 1,400 cubic feet per bi-monthly, $122.58 for water and $75.12. Excuse me, for sewer. And then under the Grover Beach proposed, that's going to be the third bar from the left, where the water portion would go down to $93.77 and the sewer portion would go up to $75.60. So under this rate structure, even with the proposed 2% revenue increase next year, the average customer would see a little bit of a decrease in their bi-monthly water and sewer combined bill. Next slide, please. So with that, that gets us to our next steps. So pending council direction, we would set a date for the public hearing. We would mail the Prop 218 notices to property owners and customers. We're looking to conduct the public hearing on May 10th. New rates would get adopted, and then, as I said, the new rates would become effective July 1 of 2021. So that is my formal presentation, and if there are any questions, I'm happy to address them for you.
Very good. Thank you, Mr. Burnett, for that that presentation. Very well put together, very well descriptive of where we stand. I think before we go to questions, I do just want to say that as I was reading through this, we're in a much better place from a water rate situation than we were 5 years ago. So when we last did this, so I do want to say thank you to the residents and to the business community and to staff for putting in the hard work that got us to where we are today. So, but let's see before we go out to the public, we'll see if Councilmember Bright, do you have any questions?
Thank you. I do have a couple, please. So let's see. First of all, regarding the O&M costs on both sides with the water and the sewer, is there any way that those O&M costs, I mean, they seem to be increasing quite a bit. Is there any way that those can be curtailed somewhat? Do we know? That's probably not a question for you, Mr. Burnett. I imagine that's probably for our staff, I suppose.
That's probably a question.
Whoever wants to take that on.
Councilmember Bright and Honorable Mayor, if I may, this is Greg Ray, your Public Works Director. Potentially, I mean, there's potentially a way to reduce O&M costs. I would say sort of at a risk. The cost of chemicals are increasing. The cost of electricity are increasing. Employee costs are increasing. And so probably the only way we could do it would be to, you know, reduce maintenance a little bit and maybe, you know, not maintain the system as well, or reduce employees dedicated to the water system, and again take a risk of being understaffed. So I think, you know, we're a pretty small department in terms of the people who are associated with the water fund and who manage and operate the water system. We're pretty small and pretty lean compared to most cities. So, you know, minor improvements potentially. We're always looking for ways to save money, but probably not to the extent that would have an impact on the recommended rate structure.
Okay, thank you for that. All right, then. So then my next question would be regarding on the residential meter rates. We may have to go back to that slide because I thought I understood you to say that that they went down. But it looked to me that the residential meter rates went up. And can we look at that again, please? The meter rates. For the residential meter rates? I don't know if I have.
Wendy or Deanne, if you could put up that slide.
Because it looks to me that the, let me think, where am I? This thing, okay.
Yeah, slide 16, I believe.
I think it's.
So is that okay. That looks like the right side, the right side.
They do go down, and that's water rates. Okay, I was looking. I think at the okay, that is the meter size. Okay, so I guess I looked at this incorrectly. So I guess I'm just a bit confused here. So all of the meter rates do go down. Not the meter. It's the base charge that I'm looking at here then.
Yes, we have the base charge going up for 5/8 inch by 3/4 inch up to the 1.5 inch. So that's going from $14.23 bimonthly to $15.68.
Okay,
and
so
then the 2, 3, and 4 inch we have going down.
And can I ask why is that?
Sure. So when we developed the proposed rates going forward, we used the AWWA meter capacity ratios. So what that means is AWWA produces a manual and it tells us how much water can go through a 5/8 by 3/4 inch meter every minute. It'll also tell us how much water can go through a 2-inch meter every minute, how much water can go through a 4-inch meter every minute. So the ratio of a 2-inch meter to the water flow of a 2-inch meter to the water flow of a 3/4 inch meter is what we use to develop these ratios. So the difference between the water capacity of a 2-inch meter to a 3/4 inch meter, we applied that ratio to the $15.68 to come up with the $52.21. Okay. When we looked at what the existing rates were, they were not matching what the AWWA is. That doesn't mean that it's wrong. It was a different philosophy at the time that that rate study was done. We just felt from a legal standpoint, you're on much stronger ground if you were able to point to the AWWA manual and say these were the ratios we were using.
Okay, well, very good. Well, that I'm very pleased to hear that. Okay, very good. So there is a basis for all of this. There's a nexus between.
Yes.
Very good. Thank you. Thank you very much for that. I have one other. Oh, yes. Okay. So, and then also there was a. There's a difference between water rates for landscape and all other. What would the all other be? Can you just give me an example?
So to my understanding, an all other customer would consume your commercial customers primarily. The landscape being your irrigation meters probably, and then all other would be a commercial business.
I see. Okay, very good. Thank you. And then my last question, I hope. can you just briefly discuss like the tiered rates just for... folks out there. I remember several years back, there was a court case regarding the tiered rates and like that. Can you talk about that just a bit, please?
Sure. Yeah, so I think the court case that you're probably referring to is San Juan Capistrano. Mm-hmm. So that did put things a little bit into flux in terms of tiered rates going forward and being a little bit more careful in how they're designed. So one of the approaches that has been deemed acceptable and has been used since San Juan Capistrano came out was to look very specifically at how much water does that customer class use on an average annual basis. So what's the average use of that customer? And then you would look at, okay, so the average use is, of course, going to be across the entire year. But then you'll have peak month water usage, July, August, usually in that time frame where you're doing more irrigation, you're filling pools, so your water demand is higher. So the difference between that average annual use and your peak month use or your highest month use is what they call a peaking factor. So that's the peak month factor. And then within that peak month, there'll be a certain time of the day where you use the most water during that peak month. So that's your peak hour rate. So the way we developed the tier rates was tier one is intended to cover your average use. So that's the water use that you would use every day, day in, day out. Tier two was set at the peak month level. So we looked at specific peak month factor, and that was the basis for the tier two differential. And then tier three, we set at that peak hour level. So we do, again, have that rational nexus. We've done the analysis. We looked at the specific peaking factors for Grover Beach specific to that customer class. And those were the exact peaking. Those are the differentials that we use between tier one and tier two rates, tier two and tier three rates. So if you were to do the math, it wouldn't come out as a nice even 2.0 or 1.5. It's going to be a 1.3 dot, dot, dot something. So we wanted to make sure that we were adhering to Prop 218 in the San Juan Capistrano case.
Terrific. Well, thank you very much. I appreciate that explanation. Thank you.
Thank you.
And I believe that's the end of my questions for now. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you, Councilmember Wright. Let's go to Councilmember Miller, see if she has any questions.
Thank you, Mayor Lee. I have just a couple. I'm wondering if we've looked at current usage in Grover Beach and have an idea of what percentage of households would fall within that first tier for water rates. And I guess that might be a Kevin question.
We did. So all the tiers that we developed were based on actual customer billing data. So we had, it was about 20% of the customer use, 20% of water use fell within that first tier. In terms of the number of customers themselves, we looked at, the city manager had asked who fell in the first two tiers. Because those are the ones that are going down, and it was 68% of customers fell in tier one or tier two. I don't have the exact number for tier one. I didn't look at it specifically, but that's something that I can research and get back to the city staff with for you.
Thank you. And then my second question is about the effect it will have on the business community. It looks like the increase in the rates based on tiers would have an adverse effect on some businesses within our community. So do we know what that average increase amount could be for a business?
That was one of the things that we were going to do. We were going to develop some profiles for you for a low volume user, a low volume commercial user, a mid-range commercial user, and a higher volume commercial customer. So we will certainly take a look at that. Within the commercial customer class itself, because there's such variability within the type of customers and the amount of water usage in there, I'm not sure that you could find, unfortunately, an average commercial customer. So we will develop those profiles and get those back to the city and out to you as soon as we possibly can.
Thank you. That's it for me.
Very good. Thank you for those questions. Councilmember Robert, do you have any questions?
I do not have any questions, but I did look over the study very carefully, and I just want to say we are in a much, much better position than we were 5 years ago. Of course, there was a serious water drought at the time also, but I'm very excited that the rates are where they are, and we got them steady for 5 years, and I think our residents will be happy with that as well. So thank you for all your hard work. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Very good. I did just have two quick questions. One of which is a more of a confirmation question with regards to the water, both the water and sewer, the cash flow projections. And mm-hmm. those are based upon our capital program as we have in our five-year CIP. Is that a correct assumption?
That's correct, yes.
Cool. Very good. I appreciate that. And then next confirmation is, as I read through the report, this does take into consideration what is the anticipated Grover Beach share of Central Coast Blue. Is correct as well, right?
Okay. Yes.
So if there was a program or grant funding for that potential new water supply, that could improve our water position, correct?
Correct. We took the most conservative approach and assumed that there wouldn't be any grant funding and made sure that the city would be able to fund it without grants. The picture would improve if grants are available.
Okay, very good. And then, and I apologize for not giving a heads up to the city manager on this question, but I trust that one or both of you will be able to answer it. If, for instance, the Central Coast Blue project does not come to fruition, but we do have the funding that's come into the city via these rates, could we use it for another project, or do we have to specifically identify the project as either Central Coast Blue, or do we need to leave that unspecified?
So the way the financial plan has been developed is it's to take care of the water utility as a whole. So if Central Coast Blue didn't happen, there may be something else within the water utility that it could be used for. You couldn't use it to, say, work on streets or police or fire or something like that. But as long as it's within the water enterprise itself, you could use it for other projects.
Very good. I appreciate it.
And just to add to that, Mr. Mayor, thank you, Kevin. Correct. If Central Coast Blue ultimately did not come forward for whatever reason, we still have a need for additional water supply in our community to meet the needs of our existing residents and businesses. So we would be seeking other alternatives in that scenario within our capital program in the water fund. And the rates within the water fund could then go towards supporting those efforts if Central Coast Blue did not go forward as planned.
Appreciate the clarification. And see, I knew you guys could handle that question. So not seeing any other questions from council members, let's go ahead and see if there's any member of the public that wishes to comment on this item. If so, please call in at 805-321-6639. And I'll check with the city clerk and see if there's anyone on the line for public comment on the utility rate study findings and recommendations.
No, we have no one on the line, and I've received no emails.
Very good. Thank you for that. Then I will go ahead and close the public comment portion of this item this evening and bring it back to the council for consideration. So let's see. So our recommended action from staff tonight is to receive the report and then provide direction to start the Prop 218 noticing process for a hearing on May 10th. Let's see if anyone has any questions, comments, or direction on that. So again, I'll start with Councilmember Bright.
Thank you. Well, I appreciate the report. Along with the staff report, it was all very concise and easy to follow, pretty much, all the different numbers and everything. But it really was a lot of information, but very important. So I thank you, staff and Wilden Financial for that. So I have to say that, like any enterprise, it is important to keep up with the cost of living, to make sure that we're able to stay solvent and to make sure that our water users don't face huge cost increases as other cities have had to do, and we had to do it one time, at least once. So I appreciate staff making sure that we do this every 5 years so we don't have to face, 25 or 50% rate increases like has happened in the past due to lack of planning. So this is important and something that has to be done. So thank you for that. And when I get my water bill, I really do appreciate that it's only 2% and not 50%. So anyway.
And since I'm fully anticipating that you are under 1,000 cubic feet per month, you would be one of the 68% of our city that would see a reduction in their water bill under these scenarios. So
I hope so.
Thank you for those. Thank you for those comments. Next, we'll turn to Councilmember Miller for any comments or direction.
Thank you. I would just echo what Councilmember Bright mentioned about the concise and easy to follow report. I think it is a necessity to ensure that we can continue to improve and support current infrastructure. Thank you.
Very good. Councilmember Roberts.
No questions, comments. Thank you again. We appreciate the hard work.
Very good. And I'll reiterate all those comments and accolades as well. So I will ask kind of to follow up on the comment that Councilmember Miller made earlier, is I would like to see, as part of our direction tonight, a request to see what impact the rate studies will have on our business community. So in a tiered format. So with respect to that, there's a I don't know if we need it before the May 10th public hearing. But I think that would serve my purposes, having it at that time. So I did just get a note from our city clerk that we do have a member of the public on the line. So with the council's indulgence, I will go ahead and reopen the public hearing, or excuse me, the public comment on this item, and turn it over to our city clerk to bring in our public commenter.
Yes, we have Jim Jaffe on the line.
Good evening.
Hello,
Mr.
Council. Mayor. Hello. I was calling about the water rate and the 218 letters that are going out. That it's my understanding the 218 is notification to the ratepayers that there is going to be a rate increase. It also provides for an opportunity to protest that rate increase. And I know other municipalities have done this, and they have required a parcel number for an order of the protest to be counted. And a lot of people don't know their parcel number. It could also just include the address. But what I'm getting at is, when you send out the 218s, I would think it'd be great if you gave them the criteria they would need to successfully submit a protest if need be. That's all.
Very good. Thank you for those comments. So I'll check with our city clerk and see if anyone else has joined us for public comment on that item.
No, we have received no other public comment.
Very good. Thank you for that. I will turn it over to either Mr. Burnett or Mr. Bronson to see if there's a clarification response for what Mr. Jaffe was saying with regards to the what criteria is put into the public notice for how to submit a protest.
I believe the notifications that we helped the city prepare has that information, but I will double check to make sure that we do have that information in there prior to them being sent out.
Okay. And do we know if it's a requirement for the parcel number or if an address will suffice, or is that something in the Prop 218 legislation language that we're following the procedures that state law requires for that? Any understanding of that? Or is that something that we can clarify before the notice is sent out?
We can certainly clarify before the notices get sent out that we have the correct information.
Okay. And I'll just add that we will be very clear in the noticing about the criteria by which people should follow. So there will be no ambiguity in what people will be able to do once they receive the notice.
Okay. Very good. Appreciate that. And so we'll go back to... just the comments that, yes, if we could have as part of the May 10th public hearing, the information on the business tiered structures. But I think overall, this is where we as a city wanted to get to a couple of years ago, where we have a fundable or a sustainable funding source with our infrastructure and our water supply via our meter rates. And then the actual water usage is based upon what the cost of water is actually based upon what you use. So it does give an opportunity for someone who uses less and wants to conserve. It gives them an opportunity to be much more beneficially impacted by having lower water bills. So I think notwithstanding the 5-year increment of San Juan Capistrano had upon water rates, I think this is where we wanted to get to, and it's looking forward to having that further discussion. So unless there is a formal recommendation that we need to make, I'll turn to the city manager. Do we need to have a motion on this, or is that direction adequate? And you are still muted.
Usually I'm really good about that. Sorry about that. I think this direction is adequate for the council to provide consensus that we will proceed with the Prop 218 process as legally required in preparation for the May 10th public hearing. And just one point, Mr. Mayor, is that the business rates are not tiered rates, so it's still a volumetric rate. So we'll make sure to specify that in the noticing as well.
Very good. Okay, great. And unless there's any further comments, we will say thank you to Mr. Burnett for his work this evening and to staff, and consider that item number 8 is complete.
Thank you.
So with that, we'll go and move forward to item number 9, which is an economic development annual report update. I'll turn it over to our city manager, Bronson, to introduce the item.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, council members. I'm delighted to kick off our annual report for economic development. I'll make my comments very brief and turn it over to Jocelyn Brennan, the South County Chamber of Commerce CEO. And I'll thank Ms. Brennan for her tremendous work with our city in helping advance our economic development major city goal. This is the third such report that Ms. Brennan has given to our council, and really reflects a great partnership between the City of Grover Beach and the South County Chamber in helping to support our business community, which has been very critical over the last year, given our COVID pandemic, and trying to help our business community through this very challenging time, and helping us position for an even stronger economy as we look forward on the horizon. So with that, I'm delighted to turn over to Ms. Brennan, and she will take from here.
Thank you. I'm going to share my screen here if I can. Can everyone see my screen? Great. Okay, well, Mayor and Council members, thank you so much. I will say that on behalf of the Chamber and all our different businesses in Grover Beach, our Grover Beach Economic Development Task Force and our Grover Beach Steering Committee, a big thank you. It's been an honor and a privilege to serve a pro-business community at any time, but it has been especially rewarding during this time of COVID-19 and when our businesses are really hurting. It's been very meaningful to be able to assist businesses in the way that we have at this critical time. And I do want to remind all the council members, especially those of you that are new, that we launched this before we knew how the world would change. So our economic development partnership began in January of 2020, and the timing couldn't have been better. So with that said, I just want to make sure that I give credit where credit is due. We have not done this alone. We have, of course, our board of directors, so with 15 members. I think half of them live in Grover Beach. And then we also have our Grover Beach Economic Development Task Force. These are board members that have agreed to spend significant time on these economic development efforts and guiding the chamber's efforts. And then also we have our monthly Grover Beach Steering Committee, which is made up of Grover Beach business owners and employees. And our chairperson is Linda Bleet, who lives there in Grover. And many of you have attended that, and you're all invited to attend when you can. We have a monthly update from the city manager as well. And the business owners really appreciate being in the know, being in the inside loop, and having access to council members and the city manager in that way. They really appreciate that. We also work with several regional partners, of course, the Cal Poly Local Economic Development Committee, REACH, SLO Partners, which you'll hear more about in a moment, SLO Cal, obviously, and the Central Coast Coalition of Chambers. So just as a review, some of the tasks or deliverables that we set out to meet, many of them have been completed this year, so I'm very happy to see that. The Grover Beach Business Survey and Analysis, you'll remember that went out at the beginning of March. So then we did a subsequent survey and combined that with some analysis from the EDD to analyze a baseline of where were Grover Beach businesses prior to COVID. And then, of course, we've been tracking how they have been impacted by COVID. We also finished the economic asset website. So this is groverbeachbusiness.com. And this is used not only to attract businesses and generate leads, but it's also a link that can be sent to any businesses that might be interested in relocating to Grover Beach, opening a second location in Grover Beach, or it's also used quite a bit recently for attracting and potential employees to a Grover Beach business. We also completed a series of roundtables. We did a manufacturing business roundtable, and it's really fascinating to see how many things are, the variety of things and how many successful manufacturing companies there are in Grover Beach for such a small city. There's really a lot of manufacturing going on and goods that are made in Grover Beach being sent all around the world. We did a construction cluster business roundtable. As you'll remember, Grover Beach has a really high concentration of skilled construction businesses. So I think it bears repeating. Typically, a city the size of Grover Beach would have about 150 jobs in the skilled construction. Grover Beach has 650. So we did a roundtable with those folks. As you can imagine, getting construction businesses on a call during this time when they're happily really busy was a challenge, but we got a lot of them there. It was a great meeting. We also did our first cannabis industry roundtable. We just did that. That was a big success. They have asked that we do another one, so that might be something that we do quarterly. We also, as you know, did four rounds of micro grants to assist businesses, and I just want to thank the council for that, and thank you for setting aside those funds. I do believe this has really helped not only the local economy, but the businesses. And to date, I am not aware of any business in Grover Beach that has permanently closed because of the COVID impact. And I think that is because we did four rounds of micro grants. So thank you for that. And we just launched our Buy Local gift card program, which is going really well. I just calculated that we have generated $11,600 to date in spending in Grover Beach. And so those receipts are coming in. And just for the public, as a reminder, if you shop in Grover Beach in retail, food and beverage, salon or personal care services, or fitness, and you spend $100, it can be cumulative. And you upload your receipts, you can get a $25 gift card to one of 15 businesses. We now have 15 businesses participating as gift card participants. So really excited, that's in progress. And then the business attraction strategy, which you will remember from the last update I provided to your council, that is ongoing and has been very successful, I would say, even though we're in the early stages of that. So business retention is also ongoing. A lot of that is focused on COVID guidelines, state and federal resources for businesses to get through COVID. And then the only thing on this list for now that is deferred is the co-work space, only because we don't know what the future of co-working is at this time because everything has been so disrupted. So those were the tasks that we set out to accomplish. These are the goals, and I just wanted to kind of take a step back and look at the big picture. Business retention and expansion, obviously, was the main goal, and we have assisted 166 businesses. They've received direct assistance in either retention or expansion. Right now, during this climate, it's been mostly retention work. And then we've collaborated with all of the groups that I mentioned at the start, but also we have used not only my hours, but chamber staff hours, and we have had just a wonderful support group of volunteers that have helped with all these efforts. And then the just engagement and data that has informed our efforts obviously started with the survey, the roundtables. We've got a lot of anecdotal and firsthand experience information and data to inform our efforts. And then also the monthly standing steering committee meeting and the economic development task force meetings. And so our business attraction has actually probably started sooner than I thought. We're doing a lot with tours and consultations and site selections with a couple developers. So that's exciting to see that activity and that interest in the community and doing business in the community. So that's a brief overview of what we've done in the last year. I have provided updates along the way, so I'll take questions afterwards if you have any questions on any of those comments. I will say that we have sent out a small army of volunteers recently to talk to each of the businesses in the corresponding sectors about the gift card program. And so it's really nice to work in a community that we can send out volunteers and they can literally go door to door and blanket the community and talk to all the business owners. So they enjoyed that. And I think the business owners appreciated it. So that brings us to planning for 2021. Some of the things that we've talked about at multiple council meetings and in the different committees has been tourism marketing. And so you're aware that Grover Beach does not have a tourism business improvement district, which is a self-assessment by the lodging partners. And really because it hasn't been ready for that yet. So we thought that we would put together a program to set those lodging partners up for success and also support the other tourism-related businesses. Because Grover Beach is getting a lot of attention right now, we want to capitalize on that momentum. So the purpose of tourism marketing would be obviously to promote Grover Beach as a desirable tourism destination, which it is. We want to get the word out there. It would also assist Grover Beach tourism-related businesses in marketing their business. And we would also engage lodging property owners in preparation for a future TBID or Tourism Business Improvement District formation. So some of the deliverables that we would like to do include visuals, photos, and video. We did get one video completed, which I'll show you here in a moment. But we would stand up a website that would be called visitgroverbeach.com. And we would spend some money on search engine optimization to get Grover Beach as a destination out there into the tourism world. And that website would host photos and video of food and beverage, different tourism activities, the beach, certain events that, you know, maybe in the future might be located in Grover Beach that would attract tourism. And then we would provide all the analytics on that website and that social media. And of course, right now we have to be sensitive to the COVID travel guidelines. Visit California is recommending that people only travel within 120 miles of their home or the 120 mile radius. So we would be sensitive to all of those. We would like to get that stood up this year and then maintain it throughout the next fiscal year. And then the other thing that we would like to get launched based on some of the requests from council and also just in a line with economic recovery from COVID-19. I'm jumping ahead. Okay, I'm going to play the video here. I haven't done this yet, so let's see if this works. Okay, so hopefully everyone recognized some of our local Grover Beach businesses in that video. That's just a short 30-second teaser video, but that's some of the type of work we would do around tourism marketing. Okay, so back on track here, workforce retention and business resiliency. These are some ideas, and I appreciate the council's feedback on this. We work really closely with SLO Partners, and they are a division of the San Luis Obispo Office of Education, and they do boot camps to train the local workforce and really upskill them so that they can afford the high cost of living here on the Central Coast. So around workforce retention, we would provide priority registration and scholarships for some of the SLO Partners boot camps. And then around marketing, we find that a lot of the small businesses, which the average size of a business in Grover Beach is under 4 employees, that they don't have the time or the resources or the training to market their business digitally. And a lot of them still have not converted to online sales. And so we believe that that would really make the businesses more resilient. And so one of the boot camps that Slow Partners does is a digital marketing training. And so not only would we propose offering some funding for Grover Beach business owners and employees to have priority registration and scholarships for that, but we would also propose that we send out a marketing expert to some of the businesses to help them get their online sales set up and guide them through that process and provide assistance for this first 6 months. So that would assist Grover Beach businesses in marketing their business to become more resilient and competitive. And then it would encourage business marketing to elevate Grover Beach as shopping, dining, and coastal destination. It would tie in really well with the tourism marketing. So I can tell you more about those boot camps, but they have precision manufacturing boot camps. They have coding boot camps. They have this digital marketing boot camp. And they've really done a great job. The average employee that takes one of these boot camps increases their pay on average by 30%. And they have placed over, I think, 200 local residents in jobs related to those boot camps here locally. So I'd be happy to take any questions. I know that was a lot of information. I went through it pretty fast. But again, thank you from me and the business community. We really appreciate all that, that Grover Beach has done to support the business community through this difficult time.
Thank you, Jocelyn, for that presentation. That was very informative and very affirmational. So I definitely appreciate that, and it I think it shows the benefits of our long term strategy of joining in with the chamber last year with this economic retention and economic viability contract with that. So let's go ahead and see if there's any members of the council that have any questions. And as the screen comes back up, I will say if anyone does want to comment on this item, please call in at 805-321-6639. And this time I'll start with Councilmember Biller, see if there's any questions she has for Ms. Brennan.
Thank you, Mary Lee. So Jocelyn, thank you very much for your report. The Chamber's partnership with the city has been a significant benefit to our business community, and your support of our local businesses is much appreciated. So the question I have for you is, you mentioned the idea of assisting Grover Beach tourism-related businesses in marketing their businesses. Can you clarify what types of businesses would be considered related to tourism?
Sure, that's a great question. In general, tourism marketing is really reserved for shopping, dining, wine tasting, breweries, and then any tourism-related activity. So these are the locked-in escape room. This is, you know, obviously the beach. There's any, you know, events that we might have in the future, like Stone Soup. So there's an ancillary benefit to professional service business as well, because we do see that a lot of people sometimes buy a second home here and then they need insurance and they need things like that. But primarily it would be around those tourism related activities and then what you would typically think of that would draw a tourist. But the main focus would be to get to a TBID, where the tourism marketing becomes funded by the lodging partners, and that's vacation rentals and the hotels and motels that we have in Grover Beach. And that can be anywhere from a 0.5 assessment to 2% assessment that they then pool their money together. And that is the funding for marketing.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I'll just add, Councilmember Miller, that if we have any, you know, future potential hotels that want to go in, they sort of expect there to be tourism marketing. So I think it would be good to have something started.
Thank you. That makes sense. And then my second question is about the Workforce Retention and Business Resiliency Program. The program, I think you mentioned, is at no cost for the first 6 months of support. Is there an ongoing cost thereafter?
So So for the program itself, for Slow Partners, the boot camps have varying price points. Some of them are underwritten by grants, and so they're really affordable, and some of them aren't. So it just depends on which boot camp a business owner or an employee wanted to take. But for our suggestion for actually, you know, going and physically assisting some of these businesses to get them set up, we would offer assistance for that first 6 months. And then we would hope that at the end of that 6 months, they would be trained and off and running with their digital marketing and their online sales.
Thank you. That's it for me.
Very good. Next, we'll go to Councilmember Roberts, see if there's any questions for Ms. Brennan.
No, you just answered the question that I had in regards to charge for the ongoing services. Hopefully they're independent after 6 months or so, but you'd always be there to help them out, I would imagine, if they came into a snag or something. We appreciate that. You do.
Yeah, great. We wouldn't turn anyone away.
You do great work, and we appreciate it. I understand we're using the SOAN suit funds to pay for all this that's going on for this year. So that's wonderful. That was it. Thank you.
Very good. Let's see if Councilmember Brighton has any questions.
I have comments, no questions. Thank you.
Very good. And so Councilmember Robert actually alluded to my one question was, so without the benefit of Stone Soup this year, so it's actually funds that are in this year's budget for Stone Soup that we're using for this, correct? In possible anticipation that we actually have a Stone Soup celebration come this August, depending upon the status of the world at that point. But so I guess the question maybe is more for the city manager is, as we proceed forward with consideration of either a future contract or future benefits, that will be built into next year's budget if we need any new funding sources, correct?
That's correct, Mr. Mayor. Yes, we did look at reallocating existing funding this year that we didn't need for the Stone Soup Festival, because unfortunately we didn't have one, towards helping to provide some seed funding for this tourism marketing effort to get off the ground. Because as Ms. Brennan mentioned, getting a T-bid up and running at some point is a goal that we all share. I think that really is the most viable instrument to be able to have ongoing tourism marketing. So this is seed funding to get it off the ground. For next fiscal year, we would be recommending a new economic development contract that would have general funding attached to it. So Stone Soup Festival presumably would happen in later 2021, funded in next year's budget, along with this additional economic development work, including tourism marketing efforts.
So I appreciate that explanation, and now I'll turn to Ms. Brennan for the tough question of, if we did have a Stone Soup Festival this year, how far behind are we in planning that?
We would probably be getting started in the planning next month. So going through the different tier levels, it would be important for us to understand from the state when something of that scale or even scaled down version of that would be allowed, which, you know, I've scoured through all the documents. I don't think that there's anything about events like that in any of the tiers at this point. But I'm monitoring it very closely, as all our Stone Soup fans are monitoring it very carefully.
Very good. I definitely appreciate that. I recall a friend of mine saying that they missed Stone Soup so much last year, about the time they went and actually danced in the streets safely, of course, to kind of replicate something that they had done in the past. So thank you for those answers. Let's go ahead and turn to our city clerk and see if there's anyone on the line for public comment on this item.
No, we have no one on the line for public comment.
Very good. I will go ahead and close public comment for this item and bring it back to the council for any action. And it looks like the recommendation is to receive an update and then provide direction to the city on city staff with regards to direction and next steps. So let's see if there's any comments or direction to staff. So I'll start with Councilmember Bright, who I believe said she had comments.
Thank you. Yes, I did. First of all, Jocelyn, you had asked for some input regarding the boot camp training. And from my perspective, I think it's a fabulous idea. for a number of reasons. One is, of course, we want the businesses that come here to be successful. And that kind of leads me to another comment that I wanted to make. And somebody that I came in contact with a couple of days ago, who happens to be self-employed in another city, had mentioned to me how impressed he was, how our city had, how we had been so helpful to the businesses in Grover Beach, and how he had wished that the local government in his city had done the same for the businesses in his city. So other businesses notice what we've done and how we have helped our city, our businesses, and how we've tried to, you know, how we've partnered with the chamber. And that I want to say to you, thank you so much. It has made such a huge difference. And you and your partners at the chamber has just really made this what could have been such a horrible, horrible situation. You have really made it bearable, I think. So thank you very much for that. Boot camp training, I think, is a huge yes for me. Another thing I wanted to say is, I was at Miners on Saturday for their big, huge sale. And the employee who was checking me out, her name was Michelle. She started telling me all about the Buy Local program. So she was saying, you can take your receipt and send it to the chamber, and you can get a, you know, she's telling me all about the Buy Local program. And I just thought that was just amazingly cool. I don't know if Miners, you know, if they're telling their employees about it, or if she just knew about it, I don't know, but she knew more about it than I did. And I just thought that was really something that, you know, they take the time to tell their customers about it. So anyway, I thought I should tell you, because it is, I just thought it was really something that she's telling me about it. So anyway, so
we both that's great feedback. Thank you.
Yeah. So it was really cool. Anyway, you're going to get my receipt pretty soon. So thank you for that.
Very good. Next we'll go to Councilmember Roberts, see if he has any comments.
No, I think I made my comments. Thank you.
Very good. Councilmember Miller.
Thank you. I too made my comments along with my questions earlier, so I'm good.
Very good. Then I'll just kind of close comment and say once again, thank you to Jocelyn and to our city manager and our staff for being able to work so well together and giving an opportunity for us to, as a city, to do these things. I believe one of the discussion items that we've had in the past is that we've done so much for our businesses, and we definitely know that they're the lifeblood of our economic drivers in this community. But as with the last item, the water rate study discussion, and with the boot camp discussion, I think this gives us an opportunity to really provide benefits, COVID or otherwise, for our residential components of our city, whether it be residents, individuals, or folks who have a need to change positions or change jobs as a result of COVID or some other situation that they happen to be in. So I think we're doing a great job of balancing our business attraction, our business opportunities, with also our residential components here as well. So I'll just say thank you for that. And it sounds like you have consensus to move forward with not only the items in the staff report, but then also in anticipation of our goal setting on Friday. I would anticipate that the city manager has some future conversations between him and Ms. Brennan to extend the contract into future fiscal years. So, but we'll let that come out of Friday officially. So. With that, unless there's any other comments via waved hands, we will consider this item complete, unless, Mr. City Manager, you need any further direction from us.
No, sir. We appreciate the council's continued support in economic development. And again, we thank Jocelyn for her great partnership and team approach in how we work together to support our businesses.
Very good. Thank you, Jocelyn. Appreciate that. So thank you, Mr. Bronson. And then I will try in the future to use 10 words rather than 100 to wander around in my brain before my comments come out. So let's it is about 7:30. Let's make sure that no one needs a bio break. If you do, just go ahead and wave at me. Seeing no one make such a wave, we will go ahead and go into item number 10, which is a proposed work scope for land use element and development code amendments to implement the 2020-2028 housing element and SB2 planning grant program. And before I turn it over to Community Development Director Buckingham, I will invite anyone who wants to speak on this item under public comment to call in at 805-321-6639. And other than that, Mr. Buckingham, the floor is yours. And you are still on mute.
And I pride myself on never doing that. We'll start over. Good evening, Mayor, members of our council. I'll start out with a little bit of background on our work scope. One of the council's four major city goals for fiscal year 2021 is to address housing and homelessness, which includes efforts to increase housing availability, particularly affordable housing. Wendy, next slide. There we go. So in support of this goal, the council recently did adopt the updated 2028 housing element, which contains programs. There are specific actions the city must take in the next 2 years. This effort's gonna require amendments to the general plan land use element, as well as our development code. The staff is in the process, or will following tonight, be soliciting proposals from consulting firms to prepare these amendments. And since this is a significant update, staff is requesting tonight the council review the proposed work scope and provide input prior to staff moving forward with soliciting those proposals. Next slide. So just briefly about the grant funding. Over the last few years, the state legislature, in unusual fashion, has approved numerous housing bills to facilitate housing production to address the state's housing shortage and high housing costs. But in support of this, they've actually approved three formula-based non-competitive grants to local agencies. And the council has previously directed staff to apply for all three of those grants, which do include Senate Bill 2, or as we refer to it, SB2, the Local Early Action Planning, or LEAP grant, and the Regional Early Action Planning, or REAP grant. So the city has been awarded all three of those grants, totaling about $250,000, and the primary source of that is the SB2 grant, which is $160,000. Next slide. So tonight we wanted to just give you a brief overview. We attached the RFP that had more detail, but give you an overview of the work scope, which is really to implement all of the housing element programs that, again, must be completed within the first 2 years of that housing element adoption, which occurred in November. So there's 9 specific tasks in this RFP that we provided to you, and I'm going to run through all 9 of those quickly. So the first task is to allow by right development of single family, multifamily, and mixed use projects based on a specific number of units to be determined by the council. And an example of a by right project would be that if the council ended up with projects less than 5 units, could be allowed by a right, which would eliminate the public hearing process. Projects that were greater than, or 5 units or greater in that example, would then still go through some kind of discretionary review process. The second task is really a major task. It's to create objective design standards that will eliminate many of our current subjective design standards to comply with state law. So when we say these are design standards, currently we really only have some design standards for the West Grand Avenue Master Plan, but this would again be creating objective design standards for single family, multifamily, and our mixed use projects. Next slide. So the third task really is includes implementing several of, I'll say, some of the more technical housing element programs. These include complying with state requirements for emergency shelters, complying with state requirements for employee housing standards, creating childcare and intergenerational development standards, complying with state requirements for low barrier navigation centers, rezoning our public facility zone to eliminate residential uses, minor revisions to our ADU ordinance, and preparing an affirmatively further fair housing plan, again, another state requirement. So all of those tasks would be part of the scope. Next slide. Continuing on, task four is to update our development code section on affordable housing density bonuses. Number five, to update all of our residential and mixed-use development standards to eliminate potential barriers to housing development. I'll give you an example I saw today. We have a minimum size for single-family residents of 1,000 square feet. So those types of things would be eliminated to create more flexibility. Task six, we need to remove or revise the subjective development standards I mentioned that do not comply with the State Housing Accountability Act. Seven, we need to revise or clarify development standards for public improvements that add cost to residential development, such as constructing street improvements and utility undergrounding, which are current requirements. Task eight is to consider increasing densities and or incentives or concessions to facilitate housing, again, especially with a focus on affordable housing projects. And finally, the ninth task is to provide flexible standards to allow for the development of residential micro units where appropriate. If the council recalls in reviewing the Cleaver affordable project RFPs, there was a firm that was proposing smaller units. We say micro units are affordable by design, where single family homes might only be 700 to 900 square feet. And so currently our code would make it very difficult for that type of a project. So that concludes the work scope. Next slide. So the last thing is the council had expressed interest as part of the SB2 application in learning more about inclusionary zoning as a potential tool to provide more affordable housing in the community. And inclusionary zoning requires residential projects to do one of two things. They either require a certain percentage of the overall project include deed restricted affordable housing units, or paying an affordable housing in lieu fee that the city would collect and then use that to fund or incentivize development of new affordable housing projects. So the work scope includes only a presentation to the council on inclusionary zoning and the potential benefits and drawbacks. So we've included an optional task in the work scope that if the council elected, after getting a presentation from the consultant on pros and cons, if then the council elected to proceed with drafting an inclusionary housing ordinance, that optional task would be included. Next slide. So finally, in conclusion, tonight staff is requesting the council provide input on this draft work scope. Following tonight's meeting, staff will finalize that work scope and we will solicit proposals from qualified consultants. After staff has reviewed those proposals, we will return to the council in April with a recommendation of an award for professional services agreement with a consulting firm. And finally, it's anticipated the first public workshop would occur in June, with this overall work effort expected to take about 1 year, which will include a significant use of staff time, and it would affect our ability to carry out other planning related initiatives during this this major code update. So with that, staff is available to address any questions from the council.
Very good. Thank you, Mr. Buckingham, for that presentation. So always good to see the benefits of a state program that they are going to pay for as well in a way to enhance development within our city. So let's see. Let's start with Councilmember Robert this time, see if there's any questions on the presentation.
Yes, you mentioned that it'll take a significant amount of your time doing this. And I think I read in the report that the funds for that we're receiving as the grants will pay for the staff time, but you wouldn't completely ignore your other duties while you're doing this, would you?
No, absolutely not. In the planning world, we juggle a lot of balls at the same time. So this just happens to be one of them. It is a major task. And while the consultant is certainly taking the lead, staff is in the background constantly reviewing their work so that the product that comes to you is acceptable.
Okay. Thank you for clarifying that. That's it. Thank you.
Very good. Next, we'll go to Councilmember Bright. See if she has any questions. And you are still on mute.
Oh, dadgummit. I hate it when I do that. Thank you. I'll start with one question that I have. Mr. Buckingham, I'm wondering how will we deal with issues? I remember way back when I was on Planning Commission, there were always issues where someone would purchase a home and they paid a pretty penny for it because they had a lovely view. And then someone comes along and they build a house and their view could be completely obstructed. And now the value of their home has been, their house has been devalued because their view has been obstructed. So how do we, I know no one's view is guaranteed, but how do we go about trying to avoid that or help people so that that their homes are not devalued? I know I didn't say that properly, but can you help me?
I'm all too familiar with what you're asking. Yes, currently one of our subjective standards is that when you do a second story or a two-story home north of Grand in the R1 zone, the Planning Commission has to make a finding that the proposed home will not substantially obstruct views from adjacent property. And this is exactly what the state is saying needs to change. What does substantially obstruct a view mean? How do you quantify that? So we will, this will certainly be something that we will raise as an issue to our consultant and expect them to provide you with options. But I will just throw out a couple of things that other communities do, and ultimately the council may need to consider. One is that second stories can actually have greater setbacks. So rather than having a 5-foot setback that we have right now, that could be increased to reduce that second story footprint. And another one is simply the council could create an objective standard that says the second story can only be 50% of your ground floor area, which would just by definition then substantially reduce the second story portion of the house. Trust us, we understand that this will be something that the council is going to want to see some options, and that is exactly what we will be having the consultant provide you, because ultimately at the end of the day, yes, we do need to come up with something that's objective rather than subjective and try to meet those community desires that you're speaking of.
Okay, thank you. I appreciate that. And the other thing that I had a question about, I can't find it in here. I had to look it up to determine what they were talking about, but I believe it is like a warming center or like a transitional home. I can't find it in the staff report.
Low barrier navigation center?
Thank you. That's it. Yes. Can you tell me? Can you speak to that just a bit, please?
They are related to shelters, and there are state laws that we need to comply with, and I couldn't give you the details, but it is about what kind of rules that you can, that you would create to turn people away. And low navigation means there are obviously fewer rules, so you can be accepting people in a shelter.
But we are talking about a shelter, not like a transitional home? Because I know we have rules for transitional homes, but are we talking about a shelter, or do you know?
I believe this is related to shelters and not transitional housing. But okay. Trust me, we will also have our consultant not only go over those state requirements, but again, provide the council with options on how we can comply with that state law.
Okay. I'm just wondering because of what, you know, what we had with the issue on Oak Park and Newport like that. So I was just wondering how that. Okay. Very good. Those are my only questions. Thank you.
Very good. Next, let's go to Councilmember Miller for any questions.
I have comments, but no questions. Thank you.
Very good. Then I did just have, I think, one question with regards to, you'd referenced, Mr. Buckingham, a potential right for housing to be potentially five lot or five structures or four structures. So is it anticipated that the consultant would also give us options as to the number, and would that potentially be based upon recent applications to the city? Or what would the thought be there?
Well, the entire SB2 grant is basically based on the ability of allowing residential projects by right, but there is no prescription as to what that threshold is. And so, yes, one of the major things that this consultant will walk through the council with is probably a number of options, but also to get input from the council as well. And I think, as I pointed out in the staff report, and that threshold might vary because a project that's providing all affordable housing, or, you know, a significant portion of the project is affordable by deed restriction, or affordable by design, micro units. If those are the types of projects that the council most wants to see, you may incentivize that by setting a higher threshold for those types of projects that you're desirous of.
Okay. Very good. Thank you for that clarification. And then is the intent or the desire of SB2 to get us completely out of subjective criteria, or can we choose as part of the RFP direction process to provide some level of subjectiveness, kind of like Councilmember Bright was mentioning with second stories? I have a second story on my house, and if there was a 50% setback, I would lose most of my upper area living space. And so is there still going to be some subjectivity that we can provide to developers and to homeowners?
I'm not an expert in the state's Housing Accountability Act, but I believe what the state and, you know, the State Department of Housing and Community Development, HCD, what they would say the intent of the law is they do not want city councils, planning commissions denying projects that either reduce density or based on some subjective design criteria. And historically, we haven't done this in Grover Beach, but there are cities, surprisingly, around the state that will deny a project based on they just don't like the way it looks, or it just doesn't fit with the neighborhood. Those are the things that the state is trying to eliminate. And that's for both by right and discretionary projects. So yes, we will have to do away with our subjective policies, but the trick or what we will need to do is craft very good objective standards that we hope will meet the council's requirements for what is, I'll say, good development.
Council, maybe I can interject one other thing I'd like to, and that is under the Housing Accountability Act, those criteria that Mr. Buckingham is referring to have to be tied to public health and safety findings. So not only do you have to have objective written standards, but those standards have to show or essentially better a public health or resolve a public health and safety issue. So there's really a two-step process there that we have to look at. I mean, to the extent that the direction of council is to go to develop as much as legally possible subjective criteria, I mean, we can look at that, and the consultant, I'm sure, will look at that. But I personally can't give you what we would have to look at what they ultimately come up with and assess it with that criteria to determine whether it's compliant or not with state law.
Okay. Very good. I appreciate that explanation. So that's all the questions I had. So let's see if anyone has joined us for public comment on this item. And if you have, or if you're watching and do you want to make a comment, please call in at 805-321-6639. And I'll turn it over to our city clerk to see if anyone has joined us for public comment.
No, we have no one on the line for public comment.
Very good. Thank you for that. I will go ahead and close public comment and bring it back to the council for further direction and or comments. So I think Councilmember Miller, you had indicated you had some comments.
Thank you, Mary Lee. As we all know, affordable housing is a vital resource for the community, and it's one that we don't have enough of, especially here on the Central Coast of California and even within our own city. So allowing by right development, creating objective design standards and other changes to allow for more flexibility will help streamline the development process. I am in full support of moving forward to implement the housing element programs. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you for those comments. Next up, Councilmember Robert.
We've received these grants already, right? All these grant, the grant fund money we received last year, is that true?
We've been approved for those funds, and then as we spend the funds, we will submit for a reimbursement.
Okay, so by receiving those, then that means we're moving forward with this, and we have to redevelop our codes to abide by what their standards are. Correct.
There are strings attached to these grant funds for sure, but we are also implementing our housing element policies, which in essence are a requirement of the state. And as I mentioned, all of these things are programmed that need to be done within the first 2 years following your housing element update. So you could argue that most all of these things are required by law. But the final product will be the council weighing in and ultimately determining that that code is appropriate for the city and meets the state requirements.
I understand. Yeah, I'm in agreement with Councilmember Miller that we do need affordable housing, and this is, I think, a good way to do that. Streamlining the process, I think, will be very helpful. So I'm willing to say go forward. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you for those comments. Next, we'll go to Councilmember Bright.
I agree. It is important, and we definitely need affordable housing. We surely don't have it here. I just want to make sure that we don't trot on our existing residents' toes while we're at it. So, I'm with you. Thank you.
Very well stated. We do need to take into consideration the character and the existing residents that are in our city. But I am supportive of moving forward with the RFP. I've always about to have a dog in my lap. I apologize. sorry about that. So we will. There is an opportunity, I think, for the inclusionary housing ordinance that I know we've got has an opportunity for a presentation to come forward to us. So I'd be interested in hearing how that goes forward, but I've never been a avid supporter of in-lieu fees for that, only because we don't have a really enough housing stock remaining to make that a viable program at this point. But I'm definitely willing to listen to the pros and cons of that and make a final decision at that time. So looks like, again, we have a recommendation to review and provide input on this. And so is there any other input that you need at this point, or would we look forward to providing additional input at the time that the consulting contract either comes forward or we hear further presentation? What's your preference?
We've got direction from you tonight. We will start soliciting comments on the RFP tomorrow. It's about a four-week turnaround. Again, once we return or we receive them, we will review and return to the council with a recommendation that will include a detailed work scope as well.
Very good. Thank you. Appreciate that. And with that, we'll consider this item to be complete tonight, and that'll take us to our second round of public communications, where if there's any member of the public that wants to speak under public comment, dial in at 805-321-6639, and I'll check with our city clerk and see if there are any members of the public who want to speak under public communications at this part of the agenda.
No, I have no one on the line at this moment.
Very good. Thank you for that. I will go ahead and close public comment, bring it back to the council for committee assignments. So let's check in with Councilmember Miller on her committee assignments.
Thank you. I have not had a meeting, so nothing to report at this time. Thank you.
Very good. Councilmember Roberts.
I have not had a meeting either. Thank you.
Very good. Next up, Councilmember Bright.
Thank you. Yes, I had a IWMA meeting, Integrated Waste Management Authority meeting. The big ticket item was the polystyrene ordinance that we had voted to postpone until April of this year. And unfortunately, it was voted to be not what I'm trying to say here. I'm sorry, I've lost my whole train of thought here.
It was repealed, correct?
Yes, it was voted 7-5 to be repealed. In order to repeal it, there needs to be another ordinance to repeal. So we'll be seeing that at our next meeting. In spite of hundreds of people who had called and written asking that it not be repealed, it was. So we'll see what comes of the ordinance to repeal it. So that was how that ended up. That was it for me.
Question for our kind of clarification on that is if it is repealed at the IWMA or the Integrated Waste Management Authority level, that does not change our own local ordinance. Is that correct?
Does not. That's correct. It does not. It doesn't change any of the local ordinances at the various cities within the county.
Okay. Very good. Appreciate that. So any other committee assignments or committee reports?
Not for me. No, thank you.
Very good. Then I did just have two committee assignments this go around. One of which was the Five Cities Fire Authority, which the main agenda topic was the approval or ratification of the MOU for the COVID-19 agreement between the county, the cities, and the Five Cities Fire Authority as the JPA. So we as a council had already approved that, and so the Five Cities Fire Authority did approve that as well. And then I mentioned that the onset of the meeting that I did have some training in a Monterey Bay Community Power Policy Board meeting, or 3C Energy Policy Board meeting, of which discussed was some updates to the HR manuals and evaluation of the executive director. So with that, that completes our council committee reports, unless City Manager Bronson has any specific updates that Councilmember Mayor Pro Tem Shaw had asked her to update, which I'm not aware of, but I figured I'd give him the opportunity.
Thank you, Mayor. And no, I have no further updates to share on behalf of Mayor Pro Tem Shaw.
Very good. Then they'll take us to our League of California Cities Policy Committee reports. Nothing to report from myself on the Transportation Communication Public Works Policy Committee. I have been participating in a couple meetings, one of which was at the city mayor's meeting last week, where Dave Molinex, our Cal Cities representative, is providing updates on legislative actions or legislative bills that are coming forward, as well as opportunity to provide some input on funding that the state legislature may pass down to cities in the form of economic vitality grants and so forth. And so keep people posted on that, or we'll have Mr. Molinex come give us an update if necessary. So with that, we'll turn to council communications and see if who has council communications. We'll start with Council Member Bright.
I don't know. Thank you.
Okay. Very good. Councilmember Miller.
I did speak with a gentleman about a week ago about eviction protections and shared information about SB 91. Also let him know we don't have any local protections that are available. That's it. Thank you.
Very good. Councilmember Robert.
None to report. Thank you.
Very good. I do have several items, one of which may be a request to consider putting something on the agenda. So let me go through a couple of different things. One is a kind of a shout out to the owner of Epic Entertainment, Anthony Salas Jr., who was announced as the 2021 Local Business Person of the Year from Alignable, which apparently is a kind of a marketing outreach online community. And so he was given that honor for the 2020 Local Business Person of the Year. Just kind of a quick update on the mayor's meeting, where we did have a presentation by members of the county clerk recorder's office, Tommy Gong's staff, with respect to redistricting and the kind of the efforts that the county is going to go through. And then obviously the city has chosen to redistrict as well. So I know the city manager will have some updates in the foreseeable future with regards to that effort. But one of the driving forces from the county standpoint is their hope that they will be able to have the same precinct maps and those within the districts for both the June primary as well as the general election. So that advances their redistricting efforts and their mapping to the June primary date. Not sure how quite that will impact us yet, considering we've got several precincts that may shift boundaries as we go to districting for council members. Last up before the request is there is a group called the City Selection Committee, which is staffed again by the mayors. And somehow I was not in attendance at the wrong meeting, and so I actually have to chair that City Selection Committee. But we are currently looking for representatives to serve as an alternate on LAFCO or as a California Coastal Commissioner. If you're considering an appointment or would like to consider a support by the City Selection Committee for an appointment to that, either of those positions, the deadline for that application process is March 12th. And that can be found at the an email that the city manager sent out to each of you today to do a possible application for that if you are so interested. So the California Coastal Commission kind of lends towards the last item. I did receive in the mail today and have obviously been tracking a number of either news stories or online discussions regarding a public hearing notice that the California Coastal Commission is going to have on March 18th regarding the Oceano Dunes CDP, its review of that, and the State Parks Public Works Program. And in prior councils, we've taken an opportunity to review the situation and provide a letter to the Coastal Commission in advance of those meetings. And I wanted to see if there was a desire by this council to have that discussion and either review our recommendations in that that letter. I think that was what 2019 was the last letter that we sent, and so wanted to see if there's a consensus to put this onto a future agenda item, which in advance of the March 18th meeting, which I guess would be March 8th, would be our next opportunity. So let's see if there's any discussion on that. So I saw Councilmember Bright kind of nod her head, so see if she had any comments on that.
Well, I would be willing to do that. I think it's important to our residents and our city. So I've been following it, trying to read everything I can about it. I did attend the League of Women Voters Zoom meeting where, I guess it was last week, yeah. So I think we should.
Okay. Very good, Councilmember Miller.
Sorry. Yes, I agree with Councilmember Bright. I think last time, Mayor, didn't you represent us at the Coastal Commission? I think that, I think we should definitely be involved in this. It plays a big part in what's going on in our community. So we should definitely put our two cents in, if you will. Thank you.
Okay. Very good. Thank you for that, Councilmember Robert. Councilmember Miller, thoughts?
Sure. So although we don't have any control over outcome, I think any decision made will affect our community. I think we should discuss this and take a stance on it.
Okay. Very good. And I'm supportive of that as well. I think perhaps from a kind of procedural standpoint, and to maybe give a little context for the city manager, it sounds like there would be an opportunity to have that discussion on the March 8th meeting, and perhaps a starting point for our discussion would be prior letters, which I believe 2019 was the last letter that we had sent. Again, and to Councilmember Miller's point, while we don't have jurisdictional authority over the entrance, I think now is an opportunity for us to, take a stance. And perhaps that stance is to encourage the Coastal Commission to provide some economic recovery opportunities or vitality for those, depending upon what their action is, or an opportunity to provide or request on behalf of our city and our residents benefits that we might be able to receive from either continued use or altered use of that entrance. So, Mr. City Manager, does that give you an opportunity to get something put together in time for the March 8th meeting? That's my last comment, so maybe this is a good opportunity for me to turn it over to you for any comments you might have and or thoughts on the March 8th meeting of a Coastal Commission letter.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Mayor and Council Members. So picking up on this item first, yes, I will be able to put together a staff report for the March 8th Council meeting. We will be carving time out for this conversation with the Council, and we will use the 2019 letter from July of 2019 as a starting point, a reference point, and then bring in updated material from the Coastal Commission staff report that was released last week, and then really help frame different options for the council to consider in crafting a potential position to highlight to the Coastal Commission, to the point made by several council members. We are an impacted stakeholder, given the location of the Oceano Dunes and given the magnitude of the issues before the Coastal Commission. And so I believe the commission is looking for communities, jurisdictions, agencies like ours to be able to weigh into this process. So I'll be working on that material, and we'll get that ready for the March 8th meeting. And we'll also contact other stakeholders, such as the Chamber of Commerce and other groups, to be able to notify them of this upcoming date. Beyond that, just a reminder to the council that your fiscal year 21-23 goal setting workshop is coming up this Friday, February 26th, from 9 a.m. to 12 p.m. We look forward to a great conversation with the council as you have a chance to rank the potential goals individually, and then collectively we'll determine how they land in the different priority tiers. I'm working with our consultant, Ken Hampion, to prepare the materials for the workshop, and we look forward to having a great conversation with the council on Friday morning. And then my last item is just to highlight that the smell of asphalt is in the air as North 8th Street was repaved today. I could hear the equipment all day long from my office here at City Hall. So North 8th Street from Grand Avenue to Atlantic City Avenue was repaved. We have some additional work to do on the street, but we're making good progress. Next will come some final work on South 9th Street from Grand Avenue to Long Branch Avenue. And then after that, we'll get to 14th Street, both north and south. So our street projects are continuing right along. And once again, we are paving the way for a better city. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
No, aptly closing comments. I appreciate that. So thank you, Mr. City Manager. Next, we'll turn to our city attorney, Mr. Hale, see if there's any city attorney reports and comments this evening.
Got to get myself unmuted. No, sorry, but I don't have anything. Thank you.
Very good. We do have a closed session this evening, which is a conference with legal counsel regarding existing litigation. Before I do see if there's any public comment, I'll turn it to our city attorney to announce the closed session, please. And you are back on mute.
There we go. Some reason I'm having problems with that tonight. thank you. We're about to convene in closed session for a conference with legal counsel on existing litigation. This is consistent or in accordance with paragraph 1 of subdivision D of California Government Code 64956.9. The name of the case that we're going to be discussing is V. Lopez Jr. and Sons General Engineering Contractors versus the City of Grover Beach.
I will just check with our city clerks if there's anyone on the line that wants to speak under public comment for closed session.
No, there's no one on the line.
Very good. Then I will go ahead and close public comment and bring it back to the council. Now, if I recall, are we staying on this call and everyone else sheds to make this a closed meeting, or how is that proceeding?
Yes, everyone will get off the meeting, including AGP.
Very good. So does anybody need a couple minutes before that, or we want to press forward and just take and wait for others to leave the phone, to leave the call? We will go ahead and proceed and ask folks to leave the